Welcome to the Cigar Lounge, the official podcast of the Cigar Peg, where you get to know your friends a little better, learn a little bit more about each other, and grow as a community. And today, we have Nelson Griswold in the Cigar Lounge. Nelson, how are you today?
I'm walking on sunshine, brother.
Oh, yeah, that's a good thing. So what is it that has you walking on sunshine today? Just tell me, what are you doing, man? What's happening?
Well, actually, it's not a weather report. The idea is that when bad things happen, and they always do, they don't always, but they will happen, it brings you down, right? Wherever you are, it brings you down. But if I'm walking on sunshine and the proverbial caca hits the fan, I end up on the sidewalk. But if I start out on the sidewalk and the caca hits the fan, I end up walking in the sewer. And that caca gets all over my shoes. So this keeps my shoes clean, keeps me up on the sidewalk, worst case.
Oh, and then everyone that listens to this now knows how not to need a shoe shine. So right. Now what, tell us a little bit about, what do you do? What is it that makes up your day? What is it you do to bring in the coin?
I work in and around healthcare, particularly employer-sponsored healthcare plans. And I work with the consultants who help companies purchase healthcare for their employees. And we are changing the way employers purchase, manage, and utilize healthcare to keep our private healthcare system from going government run, from a government takeover. And it's as much a crusade as it is a business. And the idea is to put employers, CEOs, CFOs, business owners back in charge of their second or third largest operating expense, which is healthcare.
That's what we do. How do you make that happen? How do you make this work for you?
Well, for me, I get paid by the consultants. I'm basically a consultant to the consultants. Okay. I run a mastermind group. They pay membership dues to be in the mastermind group. I do some consulting as well. And then we put on an annual conference called Ascend that is sort of the epicenter of innovation and disruption for employer-sponsored health plans.
And are you, are you more of a consultant than a speaker at this point? Or what's your deal?
Well, I'm an author and a speaker. I basically built the business on speaking. Okay. I've spoken in probably 45 of the lower 48.
Okay.
Was scheduled to go to Hawaii, and everything was in place for a speaking gig out in Hawaii. And my office manager insisted on getting the travel expenses up front. Was no need to do that, but she thought it'd be a good idea because they're expensive. And the organization that's bringing me out said, we're not prepared to do that. And so they canceled. So paid trip to Hawaii went away, and I have resented her for that ever since. But speaking has been the platform on which I really have built this business, books, writing several books and getting out in front of people. As Dan Kennedy taught me, speaking is just marketing. And most of my speaking is not paid. The payment comes from all of the business I get from speaking. I do get some paid speeches, but generally I'm out there looking for prospects, looking for new customers.
So your basic business model is a back end to speaking. Meaning
a big back end. That's right.
Yeah, I was going to say. So you're out there hustling, and when you are on stage, you are just funneling work to the back end where the magic really happens for you, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, when you're out on stage, let me ask you this, because this is something everybody probably really could learn from. Since you have built this business doing that, what would you say for you are the key things that you do on stage to drive business to your back end? What is your focus in doing that? How do you do that?
quick story to that end. Well, first of all, tell stories. And right. I'm not as good as that as a natural storyteller. I'm not as good telling stories on stage as I should be. I'm good telling them. I just don't work that into my presentations as much as I should. But what has worked for me is social proof, using social proof in my presentations. So I talk about how the strategies that we teach help healthcare consultants, my clients, grow their business, take big accounts away from much bigger competitors. And I can tell you that. But what I've learned is if I put up on the PowerPoint presentation, if I put picture after picture after picture of consultants, their name, the company they own or work for, and the big competitor that they won business from, that's compelling. And so it's using those stories. And I had one, the story I wanted to tell you is I was in New York City and I did my presentation and one consultant in the audience made a beeline. He said, "You had me when you started naming names," because he knows I can't be blowing smoke. He could call those guys and ask them, is Nelson for real? And they're going to say, yeah, of course. So that's using social proof to make my case instead of hoping they believe me because I'm an author and a nationally known speaker.
So you're weaving stories together to provide social proof where people instantly embrace the credibility of your offering.
That's right.
Pretty much. Okay.
Try it.
So once they get that, do you drive business with follow-up? Do you do it on site? What do you do?
It's follow-up. Very rarely do I transact any business at an event, at a conference where I'm speaking. I did want to go back and add one other thing that I think is really valuable. It was very helpful to me. We all tend to talk about what we do. Sometimes how we do it. And even if you've read Simon Sinek, you might talk about why you do it. And that's valuable. And that's important, especially the why, because that gets people on the same page with you. But what I've learned is that what we tend to talk about in a speech is transportation, which is what we're selling. Okay. We're selling the transportation that will get you somewhere. But the problem is nobody buys the transportation until they want the destination, until they buy the destination. So one of the things I've learned to talk about is not what I do, but where I can take you. What's the destination? What is that tropical beach, that tropical island look like? The sandy beach and the swaying palm trees and those amazing tropical drinks, the four-star food, et cetera, et cetera. That was a big, big change for me. And it gets people's attention because you're talking about what they're interested in, which is where they're going to be or where they're going to end up if they follow you.
And if they can see themselves in that situation, they are going to stay with every word you say until they get the formula that will get them there.
That's right. And of course, what I've learned too is I teach the what and I sell the how.
Teach the what and sell the how. I like that. That's nice. So I guess what I'm going to say now is, how did you figure out for yourself your formula that creates your success and drives your business? How did you figure it out?
Well, trial and error to some extent, but it really is more role models.
Okay.
So you heard me mention Dan Kennedy previously. I'm a huge, huge fan of Dan Kennedy. You could say I've lived on planet Dan for a while, for many years. And so watching what Dan does, or if going to his conferences, seeing what some of the big success stories have done. And one of those was they run a mastermind. And so that's where, I mean, I didn't think of the idea of a mastermind. It was modeled for me, and it looks like that looked like a good idea. And I'm good at pulling people together, and we're good at putting on events. So we did a mastermind, but it came because I got to see others that I admired doing masterminds.
When you say a mastermind, I mean, a lot of people in the speaking business have masterminds where we get together and we share ideas and we provide accountability to each other. You know, Ed has his association executives he puts together. What is your concept of a mastermind? When you impanel your mastermind, do you have an agenda, a plan? What do you do?
Well, so ours is, I actually run two types of, okay, of masterminds. We started out with what's known as a big room mastermind, which can have anywhere from, you know, 15 people to one of people I admire, Robin Robbins, who works in the managed IT space, has 300 members in her mastermind. Okay. So big room. Then we also started what we call it a small room, but it's up no more than 12 people, and mm-hmm. it's literally a round table or a U-shaped table, and it's capped at 12, and it's very intimate, and it's just them, and generally there are no speakers. It's just them. It's peer-to-peer mentoring.
Okay.
We hire a facilitator to run it, but there's no content. It's all internal content generated by the members. The large room mastermind, we do have an agenda. We have an MC. We've got about 30 members in our mastermind group from all over the country. This year we're meeting every time in Nashville, but previously we bounced around, and I think we'll go back to that next year to different cities around the country. We bring in a couple of speakers, and I do a couple of presentations, and then the rest is mostly peer-to-peer discussion, roundtables, hot seats, that sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah, and I ask because I know from something you said to me, most people think of a mastermind as the small room mastermind in this business, but you have expanded it to something much larger that I would assume people are paying to be a part of.
$24,000 a year.
There you go. No, and that's something for people to learn and consider. That's kind of why we do this, to find out how other people are rocking it.
And by the way, we started at 15, went mm-hmm. to 18, went to 20, went to 24 as we grew, and we were starting to show results. And when you can sell results, mm-hmm. one of my clients just let me know a couple of months ago, on his $24,000 investment, he had a 1,250% return, about $300,000 in revenue wow. this year that he attributes directly to being in the mastermind.
That's phenomenal.
So when you can do that, you can charge 24. We started out at 15, 10 yeah. years ago.
That's nice. So it takes a while, it grows, and it becomes something that's usable. And I think that's a good lesson to move on. Throughout this process, you mentioned relying upon Dan Kennedy and his philosophies, but who would you consider to be your biggest supporter or mentor in this business?
You know, I've had a couple of people who've been really good to me, very supportive and helpful. One is Bill Cates, who's one of our Hall of Fame speakers. Another is Jeffrey Hazlett, okay. also in the Hall of Fame. Both of them have been extremely helpful and mentors. Bill and I did our own little mastermind group for marketing. About five or six of us got together twice a year for a number of years, and that was very, very productive and very helpful. But it's for me, it's guys who have already been there. They were successful long before I was. And and smart guys. You know, it really isn't. It's that combination, as you know, Joe, of brains and experience, right? I mean, one without the other is not that helpful,
right?
Right. I mean, you know, you can, the experience has its value, but I've got a client, brilliant guy and very well read. He's book smart as hell, but he hasn't had a whole lot of success, but he loves telling you what he's read. And at one of our mastermind meetings, he went on and on, and he's long-winded. And finally, one of his peers said, hey, blank, let's call him Charlie. Hey, Charlie, that's great information, but could we maybe hear from somebody who's done it? And it shut him down, because he realized at that point he was talking out of his head and not out of experience.
No, an experience is something that you either have it or you don't. You can't make that stuff up. Let me ask you this, as you have gone through all of this, what would you consider to be the biggest mistake or failure that you've had, and what did you learn from it?
Oh, gee, where to start?
Yeah, I know we're older, so we have a lot of them, but we can always pick a fun one or a really bad one, both.
My dad told me probably several times, son, if you ever meet an entrepreneur and he's told you he's never had any failures, he either is just getting started or he's a liar. My biggest mistake. Oh, well, that's really easy. My biggest mistake has been not paying a lot of attention to the numbers in my business.
Okay.
I have delegated that, because that's not why I got in the business. I'm not a businessman. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a visionary, but I'm not a numbers guy. And so I've had to force myself recently, actually. I've brought on a new financial guy, and he's brilliant CPA, and he's also very savvy on business. And he said, Nelson, you gotta look at it. So I've started digging in, and it's remarkable what you learn when you start looking at your bank statements and your financials. But I delegated that to two very smart people, but they didn't have my mindset, and they weren't quite as concerned as I was about expenses and cash flow.
I'm laughing as you speak, because I'm thinking that I used to always say I was an entrepreneur, and then I realized, no, I'm a businessman with a vision. But that's because I've defended so many people that had white collar crimes and embezzled money that I got too stuck in my books. I watched too closely. That's unfortunately, some people don't, and then it gets away from them. What do you do when you're feeling stuck? What do you do that gets you back on the horse and gets you moving again?
Well, that's interesting, because I've got a number of things like converging and challenging items converging, and I've been a little bit stuck. In fact, I just before you and I got on, I was on a call with one of my advisors, personal advisors, and we were talking about this very thing. And you know, a lot of it is, and he said he's noticed over the years that people, when they don't know what to do next, they tend to do nothing. And I think that's a big part for a lot of folks of getting stuck. It's like, I'm not doing what I should do next because I'm not sure what to do next. And I don't want to mess up. I don't want to make a big mistake. So I think the best answer I can give is, and I need to take my own advice here, be more open to not taking advice or getting others in, requesting it. Joe, it's that willingness. And it's not even a pride thing. It's like, I'm happy to tell you what I don't know. I know a lot, but there's so much I don't know. I'm happy to share it with you. So it's not even that. It's the discipline, I think, of I don't know what to do here. I need to go seek some expert advice and reach out and ask. And it, at our stage of life, you and I both know a lot of people who will gladly give you advice. You know, I don't have to go hire a consultant. Mm-hmm. Right? I can just call and say, hey, look, how many people do I know in Cigar Pick? How many people do I know in the Million Dollar Speakers Group? How many people do I know in NSA who are fonts of insight and wisdom and experience? So it's recognizing I need help. I need some advice.
And that's something people should be doing more often, is building their network of people that they can rely upon, rather than just looking for someone else to bring in and hire, or returning to the same pool more often. And I think that's a great piece of advice for people. And in fact, I am laughing as you say it, because when we are done here, I'm hopping in my car, running to a bar, meeting two CEOs so I can run some business idea by them. And my fee is a vodka and a tequila. That's what I'm paying them. And usually they pick it up anyway. Let me ask you this. You said turning to people. We talk about building that network. Do you have anybody, if I say to you, who do you think right now is your biggest mentor? Do you still have a mentor?
You know, right now, it's probably this old friend of mine, the CPA I mentioned.
Okay.
Who has come along, and I mean, he's been an investigator with the Department of Justice. He was with the FDIC for 7 years. He ran the fraud division for the largest corporation in the world, Aramco. And he was in Saudi Arabia doing that. So he's very experienced, really smart, endless learner. And this guy's a CPA, and he's once a week, he's on a marketing call, a marketing webinar. Or a business webinar. So he's very broad based in his knowledge, and he's a friend. So I know he's got my interest at heart. Yep. And that helps.
Good. That's what we need. Let me ask you this question. Sitting here now, looking at your business model, your career, what did you think you were going to be doing when you were 18?
Oh, politics, public policy. Well, politics, really. Okay. When I got out of school, the first time I left without having finished, I went with a political consulting firm.
Okay.
In East Tennessee, and for several years worked campaigns. We were involved with Ronald Reagan's reelection campaign in '84.
Okay.
And then that led me to a career in public policy, and that's where I thought I would stay. But I pissed off my second governor in a row, one time too many. And I was running a not-for-profit think tank, and my board got an ultimatum from the governor: get rid of Griswold or you all are persona non grata around the governor's office. So I'm looking for a new job. And that took me into employee benefits, which got me into healthcare, which got me to where I am now. Okay. The last thing I thought I'd be working in healthcare with a bunch of healthcare consultants running a mastermind group, which I didn't even know what that was at 18.
Well, let's assume for a minute you did know what it was at 18. If you look back now, if you knew then what you know now, would you have started this earlier, or would you have followed the same path?
It's a great question, because for me, it's never been about money. My wife once asked, when I was running a not-for-profit, said, can you not pay yourself more money? I said, honey, it's a not-for-profit. It's not my business. Even though I started it, it's a not-for-profit. I have a board. And she goes, well, you're not making a lot of money. And I said, well, I've never been about making money. I've really just been about making a difference. So politics was how I was going to make a difference. This is my way of making a difference today, changing healthcare and saving our private healthcare system. But, you know, mastermind groups are fantastic because they harness multiple people, and they're the saying we use is no one of us, and we've got smart people in our group, really smart. No one of us is as smart as all of us. And so I think there, even if I'd stayed in politics, I think I probably would have found a way to bring mastermind group into that because it's just so potent.
That's great. Yeah. If you, let's put it this way. If you could woke up tomorrow and your current business was on autopilot on a straight up trajectory that you never had to worry about it again, is there something else you would like to be doing for a living? If this was not a concern anymore.
That's another provocative question. So I am not one to retire. My old CFO, who's very organized and structured, one day said, when do you plan to retire? And I just looked at her and said, do you know me? What would I do? I don't fish. I don't play golf. The hell, I die. I just shrivel up and die. So I want to stay working. I want to be relevant. I want to make a difference. But there is one thing. So you and I both share a love of and a love for and an affinity for theatrical mind reading,
yep,
mentalism. And so if I had the opportunity to devote myself full time to that, that would be very tempting. And I've done that semi-pro. I've been paid good money in the past for doing that. That would be on the playful side, on the indulgent side. The other is I'd probably go back into public policy and start another think tank, and this time not try to run it. I'd be the chairman. I'd go raise some money for it, put some of my money own money in, and raise hell in the body politic, because I don't like the way things are going in this country, and I think I could raise an effective voice, at least in the state level. I'd probably just focus on Tennessee.
And then start throwing sand out of the sandbox, as we say.
Yes. And shoving some M80s up the tailpipe.
That's there awesome. You go. So now let me ask this question. Your current business, if tomorrow somebody said to you, here is 10 times the budget you currently have, I'm investing in you, what would you use that investment for?
Oh, that's so easy. I would hire an operator. I'd hire an operator, a CEO. Okay. Because I am the world's worst CEO. I function because I have to, but so I'd hire an operator and a couple of project managers. I've got a list as long as your arm, Joe, of projects.
Yeah.
But I can't get them done either because of funding or people capacity. So we either don't have the resources, we don't have the resource, people or money to do them. So that would, those would be the two things, an operator to free me up to do my high level thinking, my vision work, my relationship work, and project managers to start implementing the ideas I have.
Let me ask this. What is, as we get to the end here, I want to ask, what is the most important lesson that you have learned over your career? You had a chance to pass on one lesson that you don't want people to ever forget. What would that be?
Because of how I was raised, my family environment, and because of a trauma that I experienced when I was very young, I have always been the lone eagle. Okay. I've always relied on myself. Do it yourself. And it wasn't a case of, oh, if you want it done right, do it yourself. It was just, if you want it done, do it yourself. And I did okay that way. The lesson I learned is that's not a very good way to operate. I would have reached out, and this is still a work in progress, Joe. I'm having to get over, you know, that early programming, big neuro-linguistic programming guy. And that initial programming is still, a lot of it's still resident in my operating system, mental operating system. Be more collaborative, reach out, include more people, embrace more people, bring more people in, lean on other people. Don't think that I'm the only one who can do this. It's remarkable. When I share our vision statement at Next Gen Benefits, which is the highest quality healthcare accessible and available to all Americans, starting with the clients or the employees of our clients. I share that with people. I shared it with Steve Napolitan, who's NSA guy.
Yeah.
And he listened to me and he goes, okay, I'm in. How can I help? And I don't think like that. It's like, oh, I guess I should just share my vision statement with people. But when you do, you'll have like-minded people rally around you. And we want to help other people, don't we?
That's it.
I mean, somebody comes to you and says, hey, Joe, I need some help with something. Can I get your advice? And unless you don't like them or don't believe in what they do, you're going to go, hey, yeah, how can I help? And I don't think that way. I've never thought that way. I'm learning to think that way, that people actually like me and would like to help me if I expose myself enough, my willingness, my being willing, if I'm willing to be vulnerable enough to ask for help.
Awesome. If anybody in the Cigar Peg is looking to get a hold of you to talk more about what you're doing or find out more about Nelson, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Email Nelson at NextGen, NextGen benefits.com, Nelson at NextGen benefits.com, or text me 615-579-8840.
Beautiful. And I really appreciate you taking the time to spend with us in the Cigar Lounge. And I look forward to seeing you again soon, Nelson.
It's a pleasure, Joe. Thanks so much. And I look forward to seeing you.
Thanks.
Take care, brother.
And we thank you, our listener members. Please join us every 2 weeks as we drop a new episode, placing another Cigar Peg member in the spotlight of the Cigar Lounge.